There was a lot of resistance. His nature resisted it. His egotistical consciousness was saying no, was declaring war against that notion, against that type of behavior. And therefore, to do it required from him a serious relationship with Hashem. And that makes him an Eved Elokim. Once, however, he has attained that standard, that becomes part of his nature, to continue on that level is very nice, is very beautiful, but he's not an Eved anymore. The relationship becomes stoic. It's not dynamic. In order for him to become an Eved, there has to be the Yetzer Lilmud, Elim Kein Yetzer Lilmud Yetzer Mergilus. Now when he transcends his Mergilus, he can again be termed Eved Elokim. So this is true about every person in every case. Wherever he stands, there is always that possibility to remain there, and there is the possibility of transcending your regulus. This explains the Talmudic statement in Masicht Chagigah Daf Tasamid Beis. The Oyved Alekim, Hainu Misha Shaina Pirkei Me'apam Im Ve'echad, that he who serves Hashem refers to one who reviews his studies 101 times. The loyavadai haino mishishayne pirkei me'apamim levat, while him who serves him not refers to one who reviews his studies only 100 times. Gemara discusses this pasuk b'shaftim reisim, with which the Alter Rebbe commences perik tesvav. Bar hey hey turned to Hillel. Amar le bar hey hey le Hillel. Bar hey hey asked Hillel. My diksiv, it says in the pasuk, v'shaftim erisim in tzadik l'rasha b'nei v'dalakim l'an shalei avadei. Hainu tzadik, hainu ei v'dalakim, hainu rasha, hainu lei avadei. The pasuk seems redundant, repetitious. The tzadik and avadei, the rasha and the lei avadei, are synonymous apparently. This is what Bar Heihei asked Hillel, amar lei. So Hillel responded to Bar Heihei, no. Avadei v'lei avadei, travayu tzadiki gemurininu. Both avadei and lei avadei are both complete tzadikim. Why is this one called Avadi and Lay Avadi? Because Ve'ene Daima, Shaina Pirke Me'apam and Lashaina Pirke Me'avachat. Because you cannot compare the Jew who studies his Perik, a certain chapter of Torah that he's learning, he reviews it 100 times, to the Jew who reviews it 101 times. Amar Lay. So Barheye asked him, Mishumchad Zimne Kari Le Lay Avadi. Because of one time, you define this Jew as someone who doesn't serve Hashem. Because I reviewed it 100 times. And you reviewed it one more time. So since I'm lacking that extra one review, I'm called Lo Yavadai. 100 times I learned it, just like you learned it 100 times. I didn't learn it 101 times. No Marash, who cares? He's not serving Hashem and he is serving Hashem. Excuse me. Amar Loi. So Hillel responded to him, in, exactly. You got it on the button. One time. It's all about one time. It doesn't nothing to do with 100 times. Tzeil mad mishuk shel chamarin. Go learn what's going on in a market of donkey drivers. If you'll analyze and you'll see what goes on in that market, you will immediately understand that this is what it's all about. And this is what Alter Rebbe explains. V'hainu. This is so mishum shabiyam mayam haya harigilus lishnis kol perik me'apam. In those days, in Talmudic days, it was customary to review each lesson 100 times. We have to remember that in that time, Teir Shebal Peh was not written. Teir Shebiksav, by nature, was written. Teir Shebal Peh was an oral tradition, not like today, when Teir Shebal Peh is also transcribed, written and printed, published, in a written form, then it was not printed. So therefore the whole oral tradition, in order that one should retain it in his memory, and it should become part of his system, had to learn it again and again and again and again to really get it, especially if you wanted to remember it meticulously, with the actual wording and so on and so forth, not just the general idea. So in those days, every Perek, every idea, every svara, every tradition, every lesson of Torah that the Rebbe, the Rosh Hashiva, the teacher, has taught his pupils, his students, was reviewed 100 times. We think we have Mesiras Nefesh when we review a Blad Gemara twice, three times, four times, eight times is already going to the Akedah. Then they learned every lesson 100 times. The Talmud illustrates this muscle mishuk shel chamarim by the analogy of the market of donkey drivers. Sheniskadim le'eser parasi bezuza. The drivers would charge one zuz. A zuz was a certain amount of money for 10 parsa. Parsa were Persian miles. A Persian mile was called a parsa. So for 10 parsa, the driver of the donkey would charge one zuz. Ula achad asar parsi betrei zuz. But he would demand two zuz for driving 11 parsa. So the question is, if 10 parsa is one zuz, so how much should he charge for 11 zuz? For 11 parsa, how much should he charge? One zuz with a tenth of another zuz. If you would take him 20 parsa, he charges you two zuz. But 11 parsa is just one more parsa. So why would he charge two zuz, another whole zuz, for just one more parsa? And the answer is, mipnei shehu yaisir mirigilus. For driving an 11th mile exceeded their customary practice. It exceeded their habitual behavior. So it's not an issue of another 10 parsa or another 1 parsa. There is another issue here. There is the qualitative issue of going beyond your regilus, going beyond the habit. That creates a whole new type of toil and effort, and therefore what you charge for 10 parsa, you charge for one more parsa. Shachan?
Shachar is forgetting, and Zachar is remembering.
This is the mashal that Hillel explained to Barheihe when he said, this makes the whole difference. He said, in. The one parsa makes the whole difference. The reason it's 101 is to keep the cycle going? No, we'll see in a moment. When the Svardim give a nedava, it's always with a one. Perhaps it's connected, I don't know. Because 100 is Hamachmem. Okay. 100 is Hamachmem, so they go beyond it. Okay. V'lachain, Amichael is Me'evech. V'lachain, therefore, Zoi Sapam Hame'evachas. This 101st revision. How you say al harigilus sohurgal min urav, which is beyond the normal practice to which the student has been accustomed since his youth, shkula keneged kulam, is equivalent to all the previous 100 revisions combined. Over here, in this case, he studied the lesson once, but since this one time was Yiseid al Harigilus Shehurgu min Yudav, went beyond the normal practice to which this person is accustomed to, it is mamish equivalent, it's shkula, to all the previous 100 times. But it's not only equivalent. V'ayla al gabeyin b'yeser se'eis v'yeser eis. In fact, its quality surpasses the first 100 times in its greater strength and power, Liyos nikra eved elokim, so that it is only this extra revision which entitles the student to be called an eved elokim, which puts him in the category of him who serves Hashem. The first 100 times, although quantitatively they surpass, of course, learning ones, still do not place him in that category. He is called lo yavadai. It's this one more time of learning that makes the whole difference and transforms him from an individual who is defined as Layavadeh to an individual who is defined as an Eved Elokim. And when 101 becomes normal, so if he learns 101, he's also not an Eved Elokim. He's a Lo Yavad. He has to learn 102. Right. He's going past his normal limit. And what this is saying is that it has nothing to do, or it doesn't have so much to do with the quantity. What it has to do very much is with that qualitative shift from your present identity. It has to do with transcending your natural disposition and character. For one person, learning 100 times is impossible for another human being. For another human being, 3 times is equivalent to this person's 100 times. According to his natural makeup, according to who he is, his background, his knowledge, his character, and so forth. But for this person, learning 100 times, although it's much more, there was no shift of the eye. He never left his comfort zone. This is part and parcel of his comfort zone. Another human being can be in totally a different situation, but in his one more time of learning, he became an Oyved Elokim. Why did he become an Oyved Elokim? Because he had to fight. He had to engage in a serious battle. And engaging in a fight for Hashem deems him and terms him someone who serves Hashem. And as Dr. Rebbe explains, Mipnei shekedei l'shanes teva harigilus, for in order to change his habitual nature, tzarich la'ered es ha'av al Hashem, he must arouse within himself the love of Hashem, al yidei shemizboinin b'gdulas Hashem b'meich, by contemplating Hashem's greatness in his mind, lishloit al ha'teva shebechol ha'smoli, in order to master the nature that is in the left part of the heart, ha'moli dam, which is the seed of the animal soul, which is full of blood. The left side is full of blood. Ha-nefesh ha-bahamas, the blood in which is enclosed the nefesh ha-bahamas, the animal soul. Shemei ha-klippa, which originates in the realm of klippa. Shemimeno hu ha-teva, which from her, from klippa, which is the origin, the essence of this nefesh ha-bahamas and chol ha-smali, from there comes nature. From there comes the Teva HaAdam, which is resisting this shift, which is resisting this extra lesson, this extra review of Torah. Shemimeno hu HaTeva. There is a comfort zone in which we serve Hashem. There are those patterns. In Talmudic times, it was learning something 100 times. 100 times. That was the regilus. That was the natural habit which every Jew, every studious Jew, every Talmud Chacham was accustomed to. So yes, it's a beautiful thing, but you're not an Eved Elokim. Then there is that one little thing that doesn't suit you. And you go ahead and you do that. Why do you do that? For this, you have to have a relationship with Hashem. Kedei l'shanes teva harigilus. Hashem has to be meaningful to you, really meaningful to you. Because your teva resists it. So the Alter Rebbe says, what's wrong with teva? This is who you are. Shem mimeno hu ateva. Teva comes from klippa. The 100 times the comfort zone comes from the egotistical shell, which doesn't allow you to get in touch with real energy, with your real energy, with real energy of the world. It comes from the shell. This is who I am. This is klippa. Mimenu whatever. If a person is complacent with that, he's being complacent with a very external dynamic of his life. So a person has to go beyond that. But this is his regilus. Hashem has to become meaningful for him. You have to have a relationship with him. When you have a relationship with him, you're ready to fight for him. If not, you're not ready to fight for him. And with these words, I feel, when I was learning it, the Alter Rebbe is declaring war against the smugness of institutionalized religion. It's a very deep insight I just said. In his times, it was beginning. And now we experience it constantly. Institutionalized religion is characterized by this complacency, by this smugness. I found a very nice comfort zone. God, fine, come in. Very nice. I'll daven 3 times a day for you. It fits in the schedule. It fits my character. Nothing major. But don't bother me too much. Okay, you want, there comes a day, I'll have an extra shiur, l'kavod Shabbos, l'kavod Yom Tov Gezuntheit, I'll fit it into my schedule. Where Hashem starts suiting who we are. We like when things are established comfortably. Teva. There's a zone. These are the patterns. That's it. I'm not going out of the patterns. The patterns might be complex, but this is my pattern. This little shift, this little dent, it might be one moment, it's one time, is greater than 100 times of learning. Why? How could one time of learning be greater than 100 times? Or let's put it in time, in hours. How can 1 hour of learning be greater than another person, the 100 hours of learning? That's what the Gemara is saying. The Meir Pa'amim Ve'Echad, because this hour of learning required a fight. And to fight for someone, you have to have a real relationship with them. V'zuhi aveda tamal abeinani. The Alter Rebbe continues, this is the perfect service for the Beinani. What's this? This type of life, where the Beinani has 2 souls and has to struggle, but it's constantly going that step beyond as a result of a cognitive, emotional, conscious relationship with Hashem, that is complete Aveda for a Beinani. For a Tzaddik not, but for a Beinani, this is Aveda Tam. Oy, there's an alternate type of Aveda. La'oided es ha'ava m'sateres shebeliboy. To arouse to a revealed state the love of Hashem inherently found hidden in his heart. Limshoil al-yada al-hateva shebechalala smali. Thereby to control the nature that is in the left part of the heart. Shazun nikra gamkin avayda. This too is called service, avayda, although an imperfect service. Lihilachem imateva v'hayetzer. To wage war against his nature and inclination. Al yidei shema'oided ava mesateres beliboy. By arousing the love hidden in his heart. So by arousing this love and through it mastering and waging war against his teva, also places him in that category of personalities that are defined as Oivdei Elokim, as people who are serving Hashem. Psychologically, when you want to convince someone to do something, there are 2 methods how to do it. One method is by explaining to him that although you don't want to do it, but this is true. This is the proper thing to do. Intellectually, I'll show you that this is right, this is correct. So if the person is honest and claims to be someone who is idealistic somewhat and who cares what is right and what is wrong, you might convince him and he will engage and embark on this path, on this road that you are requesting him to embark upon. Another method is different. By convincing him that this is truly what he wants. By showing him that on a deep level, this is what he really wants. What is more helpful and what is more successful? Usually the latter is more successful for most ordinary people because we really don't care about what's right and what's wrong. We care about ourselves more. If you could prove me that this is who I really am, I'll fall for it if you can really show it to me. If you prove me that this is right, very nice, but I'm not interested in it. It requires a deeper type of a person to fall for the former. For the lower person, the latter is usually more compelling. That's one issue. What is greater?
In a sense, the former is greater, in a sense, the latter is greater. When someone understands that this is correct and feels for it, there is an awareness and a passion that permeates his entire conscious and personality. He can explain it, he can articulate it, he lives with it in a very deep way. He has thought about it, and he has created as a result of that feeling. He has created something. So there's a very deep relationship. If I just convince you that this is who you are, so this is who I am. But you don't have to work to create it, to cultivate it, to nourish it. So it's there, it's part of you, it might be deeper than anything else, but there is not that conscious relationship. As we shall soon see in the Tanya, to create a real relationship with Hashem and to live a life of a Beinoni can also be done through these two methods generally. There is one method where the human being comes to the recognition of what is true and what is untrue in life, and as a result of that develops a feeling for it. And that's something that you have to meditate for, you have to contemplate, you have to toil, both intellectually and emotionally. But when you have it, there is a full-fledged spiritual relationship that permeates your mind and your heart. And then there's another method. And that is, even a person who cannot or will not go through this whole process, the Jew essentially, on the deepest level, is connected to Hashem. A theme which the Alter Rebbe will elaborate upon in great detail in later chapters, especially chapters 18 and 19. And demonstrate it actually in very vivid terms. And if you recall that, and if you connect to that, that is also a very powerful tool and a very powerful method. But it's different. It's a different tool, it's a different method that isn't being employed. So the Alter Rebbe says like this. The Beinoni could change his regilus as a result of one of two things. Or an avoida tama, a complete avoida, which is this process of his Beinonus, of contemplation, of meditation, which results in a love. And when you love someone, you fight for him. And you learn 101 times, not 100 times. That's avoida tama. But then there's also another aspect in the Beinoni's life. He can tap in and access to his Jewish essence, which doesn't come as a result of meditation and doesn't have that passionate, revealed love which exists when you create it as a result of your own achievements. But nevertheless, he taps into that, and as a result of that, he dominates that natural nature which comes from the husk and shell element in man's consciousness. And this is also avoida. Why is it avoida? You didn't create that love, but you have to fight to get in touch with it. And if you want to live by as a result of that, you have to wage war against your Nefesh HaBahamas. And therefore this person is also Neved Elokim. If, however, he wages no war at all, although he has a relationship with this Av, and that's why he's a Beinoni, this love in itself can in no way be credited to his service, and he is therefore called a person who is not an Eved Elokim, because he did not cultivate, he did not create a relationship with Hashem. The relationship of this Ava Mesoteres, a Jew has inherently. And therefore, even a Loyavad, a human being who is a Beinoni, taps into it. If not, he wouldn't be a Beinoni. A person who is a Beinoni is because he acknowledges his Nefesh Alikis, and he lives by it. But since this Ava was not a created, cultivated relationship, it was actually a little somewhat cultivated, but not created, so he's not called an Ovid. If, however, his Nefesh HaBahamas wages war, that's all if his Nefesh HaBahamas is comfortable with it. So he taps into his Nefesh HaLikis, but since there's no opposition, he's not called an Ovid HaLikim. But if there is opposition, if his Nefesh HaBahamas opposes it, and there is deep resistance, so now it's not just enough to know that you're Jewish and to feel Jewish, so you go ahead with it. Now you have to wage war in order to be a Beinoni. So although he didn't create this Ahava, but this Ahava becomes a very serious factor in his life. He has a serious relationship with this Ahava. It becomes very meaningful to him, to the extent that he's ready to transcend his natural habit. And therefore he also enters into the category of Eved Elokim. But the bottom line is, in both cases, whether it's whether the motivator for changing his nature is a contemplated, meditative process which results in passion, or it is accessing an inherent Jewish passion. In both cases, the human being is termed an Eved Elokim, for his relationship with Hashem is not taken for granted. It's not stoic. It's not dead. It's dynamic. It's alive. It's powerful. And it's adventurous. There is a serious journey here. I want to conclude with an idea that the Alter Rebbe explains elsewhere concerning this issue. For with this beer, with this insight that we have in Perek Tesvav, the Alter Rebbe discusses and explains a very enigmatic, quite absurd at first glance story episode that's related in Gemara. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah Daf Yud Ches Amud Aleph discusses the very tragic fate of one of the great Tanoim, Reb Chanina ben Tradin, who was one of the Asara Harugi Malchus, the 10 martyrs, the greatest leaders and scholars of the Jews, who were executed by the Roman legions in the century after the destruction of the second Beis Hamikdash, which was in the year 70 after the Common Era. The Gemara says, and Daf Yud Ches in Avodah Zarah, Tanu Rabbanim, Kishechala Reb Yosi ben Kisma Halach Reb Chanina ben Tradin Levakre. Reb Yosi ben Kisma, who was one of the older, greater Tanoim, fell ill. Reb Chanina ben Tradin went to visit him. Amar Loi Reb Yosi turned to Reb Chanina. He said, Chanina, my brother, do you not know that this nation, the Roman nation, has been established from heaven? Hashem has desired that they reign, for we see that they have managed to destroy his home, the Beis HaMikdash, to burn his heichel, his inner chamber. They have executed Chassidov, the most pious of the Jews. They have eradicated Estuvov, the elite, the best of our nation. V'adayin hi kayemes, and it's still existing. So obviously, from heaven they have established this monarchy. And I hear about you that you're sitting and you're studying Torah, and furthermore, you are assembling large crowds, makil kihilois barabim, to study Torah, and there's a sefer Torah which lay in your bosom, v'sefer Torah munach l'cha b'chekecha, despite the fact that the Roman Empire has decreed a decree prohibiting any type of Torah study, certainly public Torah study. So Reb Chanina responded, and he said, min hashamayim irachemu. From heaven they shall have mercy. So Rabbi Yossi said, I'm talking to you words of logic, and you're telling me, min hashamayim irachem, wani ayim l'chadvarim sholtam, that there's a nation which is still existing despite their barbaric, murderous activities in the past century, and you're telling me that from heaven they'll have mercy. I wonder if they will not end up taking you and the Sefer Torah and burning both of you alive. Tamanim la Yisrifu Eischa v'Sefer Torah Be'esh. Amalei, so Reb Chanina turns to Reb Yosi, says, Rebbe, ma ani l'chaye yeilam haba. Indeed, if they do it, if they burn me alive with the Sefer Torah, will I merit to experience the life in the world to come, the life of Olam Haba? Amar Lei, so Rabbi Yosi answers, Klum Maisa Baliyotcha. Tell me a story about yourself, and I'll be able to answer you. Tell me a psa maisa which will demonstrate who you are. So Rabbi Chanina comes up with a maisa. Amar Lei, he tells him an interesting story about himself. Moyes shall purim nischalfuli, but Moyes shall zdaka vichilaktim lani. According to Rashi's interpretation, Reb Chanina ben Tradin was a gabbai tzedakah. He would collect money and distribute it to the poor for charity. One year, it was Purim time, and he placed a bag of money on the side in his home, and this was the money which he devoted in order for his Purim party, for his Purim Suda. By mistake, he made an error, and he thought that this money is part of the tzedakah money that belongs to the poor man. He didn't realize that it's his personal money that he put away for Purim. So what did he do? He gave it away to poor men. Then he realized that it was not tzedakah money, it was his personal money. So the natural thing to do was to go to the tzedakah money and to take the same amount to pay himself. He said, I didn't. I allowed the Purim money, which was my personal money, to stay by the Aniyim. This was the story. On my life, Rabbi Yossi told him, Im Kain, if so, Michelkecha Yehechelki, Umegayrolcha Yehegayroli. Your lot should be my lot, and your fate should be my fate. You're asking if you're going to receive Chaye Elam Haba. I hope that what you're going to receive, I will also receive. And so the Gemara concludes that several days passed and Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma passed away. And all the great men of Rome went to his funeral and they eulogized him with great hespedim, great eulogies. And on the way back from the funeral, the Romans found Rabbi Chanina ben Tradian sitting, studying Torah with a large assembly of Jews, and a Sefer Torah was laying in his bosom. They took Rabbi Chanina, they wrapped him up in a Sefer Torah, they surrounded it with chavileis meiris, with branches of a grapevine, and they ignited him and the Sefer Torah on fire. But that was not enough for them, of course. They took large pieces of wool, of tzemer, they soaked it in water, and they placed it on his heart, so that he shouldn't die fast. And Reb Chanina is laying there, enveloped in a great fire, and his Talmidim are standing and observing it. And his daughter tells him, Abba, Father, Erecha Bekach, how can I see you like this? And he said, at that moment, he said, if I would be the only one being burnt at this moment, it would be difficult for me. But now that I'm being burnt together with the Sefer Torah, so the same being who will demand and I will pay retribution for the shame of the Sefer Torah, will also seek retribution for my own elbin, for my own shame. And his Talmidim asked him at that moment, Rabbi Ma'atariya, what do you see? What do you see now? And he said, I see Gvilin Nisrafim Va'isis Perchas. The parchment of the Sefer Torah is being burnt, and the Isis, the letters, are soaring. And they told him, why don't you open your mouth? Let the fire consume you. Let the fire enter you and you'll die. Reb Chanina said, Mutav sheyitlena mishenasna vayechabalu ba'atzmai. Let the person who gave me my soul, let him take it away. I'm not going to kill myself. I'm not going to harm myself. The one who was in charge on the fire asked him, Rebbe, if I increase the fire and I take away the wool, can you promise me that you will bring me to Olam Haba? The person, the Roman soldier who was making the fire. So Reb Chanina said, yeah. He said, make me a shvua. Take upon yourself an oath that I'll receive Olam Haba. So Reb Chanina ben Tradian made a shvua. He swore. And this person immediately increased the fire, took away the wool from his heart. Reb Chanina's soul departed from his body. And the one who ignited the fire jumped into the fire. And at that moment, the Gemara says, a baskel came out of heaven and said, Reb Chanina ben Tradian and this human being are both mezumanin l'chaye Olam Haba, are both going to enter the life of Olam Haba. And then the Gemara continues, Bachar Rebbe, Rebbe cried, and he says, Yesh kainei lamai b'sha'a achas v'yesh kainei lamai b'kama shanam. There's a person who purchases his future world in 1 hour, in 1 moment, and there's a person who has to work for it for several years. This is the story in Gemara. Apparently, from beginning to end, to the end, it's very difficult to understand what is going on over here. The conversation between Reb Chanina ben Tradian and Reb Yossi ben Kisma is simply mind-staggering. Staggers your imagination to hear what Reb Yossi ben Kisma is telling Reb Chanina ben Tradian. Parenthetically, I was looking at the Gemara, the Rakatshaver, Rabbi Yosef Rosen, passed away in 1936. He was one of the greatest most extraordinary Torah minds of last century. He was the rabbi of Dvinsk. And he's known with his Svarim Tzafnas Paneach. So he has a little note on this Gemara. And he explains the conversation between the Talmidim and Reb Chanina ben Tradin while he was being consumed in the fire in a very interesting halachic way. I guess every piece of Torah lends itself to interpretation in many ways. And from his interpretation, you see the power of halacha. He says, what do you mean, what do you see? What do you see? They asked him, what do you see? And he said, I see the parchment being burnt and the ice is soaring. He says like this. The din is, the Gemara says in Mayat Katan, Daf Chavav he brings, that someone who sees a Sefer Torah being torn has to make kriya, has to tear his garments. And the kriya he has to do twice. One on the gvil, one on the parchment, and one on the letters, on the ksav. Because both contain the kedusha of the Sefer Torah, and therefore he has to do two kriyas. In Yerushalmi in Mayat Katan it says that the same din is also if the Sefer Torah gets burnt. You also have to do kriya on the Sefer Torah. Not only if you see someone tearing a Sefer Torah, if you see a Sefer Torah being burnt, you also have to rise kriya. Now the Gemara says in Shabbos, Kufta Zayin, the Rekat Shavar says, that when the ksav is removed from the parchment, when the isis, the letters are removed from the parchment, there's no kedusha in the parchment anymore. Because the whole kedusha in the parchment comes as a result of the letters. So if you erase the letters and then you tear the Sefer Torah, you don't have to do any kriya because now the parchment doesn't have any kedusha. So when this Sefer Torah was being burned, the Talmidim had to do kriya. So they wanted to know the halacha about it. So the question, what do you see? If the parchment is being burned first, so when the parchment is being burned, there is still a kedusha, so they have to make kriya sai on the parchment, sai on the isis. But if the letters are being burned first, so by the time the parchment is being burned, it doesn't have a kedusha anymore, so they only have to do kriya once on the letters, but not on the gvil. So Reb Chanina ben Tradian answered, Gvilin nisrafin va'aisis parchis. First is gvilin nisrafin. The gvilin are being nisraf. So when the gvilin are being nisraf, there's a kedusha. And then aisis parchis, of melee you have to do kriya twice. This is the Rakat Shavar's thought. You see from here what halacha is. You see from here what halacha meant to these Jews. But that's derechag of the kish. I just want to say one word Al Terebbe says about this story. Reb Chanina ben Tradian is a Jew who devoted his whole life for Torah study and for spreading Torah. He was one of the greatest Tanoim of his times, to the extent that he was chosen to be killed by the Romans as one of the Asara Rugi Malchus. So Reb Yosi ben Kisma says, you're not allowed to be doing what you're doing. You're not allowed to be teaching Torah under such circumstances. There is a death penalty for it. You're not allowed to do it. Reb Chanina says, from heaven they will have mercy. Reb Yosi ben Kisma tells him, I'm talking to you logic, and your fate is going to end up that the end of your fate is going to be they're going to take you in the Sefer Torah and burn you. So Reb Chanina says, okay, but I want to know one thing. Am I going to come to Olam Haba? Major question. Am I going to come to Olam Haba? Why is he going to be dying? Why is he going to be executed? Why is he going to be burnt alive? Because of Torah. Because he wanted that the Torah should not be forgotten from Klal Yisrael. Because the Romans then made a decree that no one is allowed to learn Torah. That's why he's being burnt alive. So he wants to know, when his soul does depart from his body, where is he going? Will he b'chlal have a relationship with Olam Haba? So Rabbi Yosi ben Kisma hears the question, and he says, you know, that's a good question. I don't know. Klum maisa b'aliyadcha? Tell me a story about your life. Tell me something nice you did in your life, and then I could tell you if you're going to go to Olam Haba or not. The fact that you're dealing with one of the greatest Tanoim of his time, a man who learned Torah his whole life, who devoted every iota of his energy, of his soul, for Limud HaTorah, doesn't tell anything to Rabbi Yosi ben Kisma about this person's destiny after he concludes his journey on this world. The fact that Rabbi Chanina ben Tzadin is ready to sit with a Sefer Torah and teach Torah to large crowds of Jews, despite the fact that under natural circumstances there is no room for it whatsoever, That doesn't tell anything to Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma. The fact that he's ready to get burnt alive for it has nothing to tell to Rabbi Yosef, to say to Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma if this person is going to have Olam Haba. He has to know a story about his life, if he did something nice. So Chanan ben Tardin starts contemplating and he comes up with something. You know what's the story? It was one Purim, and he had a bag of money, and that bag of money was his, and he gave it away to poor people, and he didn't demand it back. Major issue, huh? He gave basically some extra money for tzedakah. When Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma heard that, he said, "In Cain, if so, your lot should be my lot. Your fate should be my fate." Now I hear this. Everything else, I don't know, maybe yeah, maybe not. But now that I hear that you gave away Purim money for tzedakah and you didn't demand it back, now your chayei olam haba is secured and I wish I can have part of your life. Alter Rebbe in Torah Oid Parshas Toldos brings up the story in his Sefer Torah Oid and he explains it thus, based on the idea conveyed in Tanya Perek Tosvav. The question Reb Chanina was bringing up to Rabbi Yosef ben Kisma, Ma ani l'chayei olam haba, wasn't only a question if he's going to go to paradise or he's going to go to that place which is the antithesis of paradise. It was quite obvious Reb Chanina ben Tradyan is going to go to Gan Eden to olam haba. Ma ani l'chayei olam haba, do I have a relationship with the life of Olam Haba? What's haste? You learn Torah your whole life. You're ready to give your life for Torah. What's the question? The Alter Rebbe says like this. Reb Chanina ben Tradyan wasn't so sure that his learning Torah, his commitment to Torah, his diligence in Torah, his mysterious nefesh for Torah, is an Olam Haba experience. And the difference between Olam Haza and Olam Haba is Olam Haza is a physical world, is a world where divinity is obscured, is a selfish world, is an egotistical world. Olam Haba is a world where Nenim is Ziv Hashchina, where godliness is reality. He wasn't sure if his Torah is an Olam Haba Dikat Torah, if he's a Ben Olam Haba, if his Neshama can really experience and suck out the marrow of Olam Haba. Why? Maybe his deep, powerful, amazing commitment to Torah came as a result of his natural disposition. And the Alter Rebbe says, even by non-Jews, throughout the generations, there were people, he says, there were princes, there were kings, there were great men who had physically everything they wanted. And nevertheless, they abandoned all, and they devoted their whole life towards intellectual pursuits. And physicality and mundaneness and earthly pleasures were simply insignificant in their eyes. Absolutely mediocre. They had no liking towards them. Why? Because their natural character was of such that they loved knowledge. There are people that love knowledge, that love learning. Learning by them, muskolei, seichel, that is their high, that is their drug, that is their LSD. That fills their void. We need certain cravings or other things in order to be happy. But for them, another idea, another intellectual insight, that is the greatest thing for them. They push it, love it. They marvel in it. Naturally. Reb Chanina ben Tradyan was a Yid. He realized the deep wisdom of Torah. The wisdom of Torah surpasses any other type of wisdom in the world. There's nothing like the wisdom of Torah. And Reb Chanina ben Tradyan knew what a Yid is. And he certainly had a relationship with that Ahava that a Yid has. And therefore, he felt he loves Torah. He can't live without Torah. Life without Torah is meaningless for him. What is life without Torah? He's going to eat. He's going to drink. He's going to start a business. It's meaningless for him. Without learning Torah, without teaching Torah, without inspiring other people, without leaving the legacy of Torah, it was meaningless. Ma ani l'chayei olam haba. Does it have to do with godliness? Is my mysterious nefesh for Torah a result, a consequence of me having a real relationship with my soul, with having a real relationship with the emes, with transcending my ego and connecting to true reality? Or is it ultimately, after everything's said and done, an expression of my natural ego more than everything else? Or at least, that plays a role in it. That plays a major role. That's a question. Tell me about yourself, about your nature, about your character. So Reb Chanina tells him, he starts thinking about these issues. He says, there was a maisa, Purim. There was money, belonged to me. I thought it was stuck money and I gave it away. And it didn't bother me. I left it there. Now the Rambam explains in Shmoyne Prakim and in other places that these two natures are in contrast. A person who loves learning is usually introverted and is more stingy with their money. They're more reserved. They like to retain things. A person who's more frivolous and careless and spends more has more that nature of extrovertedness, of outgoingness, and doesn't have that zitzfleisch to sit in one place and to love learning and learning and learning. And they usually think things go together. You have a person who loves spending money and throwing out money wherever he can and really doesn't care about it. And those are more the party animals who have a difficult time in the intellectual realm of life. And then there are people on the other extreme. And over here, suddenly, Reb Chanina ben Tradyan became the spender. He became the spender. Im Kain, Michalkecha Yehichalke Migeralcha Yehigerali. Because this revealed that his Mesirus Nefesh for Torah wasn't only defined by his nature, but it came from the fact that Reb Chanina ben Tradyan was connected with Elam Haba. He was an Eved Elokim. And therefore, your lot should be my lot, and your fate should be my fate. Have a wonderful week.
Rabbi Jacobson delivers this weekly class on the Tanya each Sunday morning at Heichal Menachem in the Borough Park section of Brooklyn, New York. To order additional tapes or to receive the tapes weekly by mail, please call Heichal Menachem at 718-633-1076.